This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed on this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Boards of Regents. You can access shows live or as a podcast by going online to kuci.org. This is the In the Garden show produced by UC Cooperative Extension Master Gardeners of Orange County. I am Katrina Kirkaby, your Master Gardener host for the day. And I am really super excited about our show today because it's springtime, summer's coming, and we have a bounty coming from our gardens. And today I have with us Cinda Webb, and Cinda is the coordinator for the Master Food Preserver Program in Orange County here in California. Welcome, Cinda.
Hi, Katrina. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know about you, but my garden is pretty hopping right now with all these good things coming from the garden. How about yours?
It's not quite there yet, but there's still stuff out there that I can harvest and turn into something.
Yes, you can. You have a gift for that. And today, everybody, we're going to be talking about what we can do with our bounty from our garden. And hopefully we'll have Cinda here next month again. We'll talk about some more. But first of all, Cinda, you're a master food preserver. And we've been talking a lot about master gardeners, but what is a master food preserver?
A master food preserver is similar to a master gardener. We're both part of the University of California's Cooperative Extension, and we exist to take research-based information and get it to the public. So our volunteers have taken a 10-week class, and they learn lots of different methods of food preservation, and then they turn around and agree to volunteer 25 hours a year, and their mission is to get research-based information out to the public.
And it's research-based information on how to preserve, is that correct?
It's research-based on food safety, and how to preserve, and lots of different methods of preservation. So the food safety part is one big part because we don't want anybody to get sick. So we teach cleanliness, you know, in food preservation or preparation, you need to keep things separate. So like your meat cutting board separate from your vegetable cutting board. And we teach how long you can leave food out with safely. There's a danger zone between 140 and 40 degrees. That's where bacteria, if food is sitting out, they really proliferate. So you want to keep things cold or keep things hot. You don't want to leave them sit out at room temperature. So all of that kind of information is also what we teach.
Ah, so we get good stuff from the garden and we preserve it and we preserve it safely.
And if we're having a party at our house, we know how to safely feed our guests. If you're having an afternoon party and you left the potato salad out for all afternoon, that could make somebody kind of sick. So we teach that as well. We want safe eating and safe food preservation. Safe food overall is the overarching idea there.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I've enjoyed the Master Food Preserver program, and I know so many of the people in the community have enjoyed it. And maybe we should talk a little bit about what is it and what's the history of it.
Well, in Orange County, it started with master gardeners, actually. There were five master gardeners who heard that there was such a thing as a Master Food Preserver program, and those five went to San Bernardino, where the program was already in effect. They took the class in San Bernardino, and then those five came back and set up the first class in 2012, and since then we've had a class every year and more volunteers to grow this program up. Those five did such a great job because they had to not only teach it, but they also had to develop the infrastructure and all the equipment and all of the other things needed to do this program. So it was a great thing.
And master food preservers right now, they go out to the community?
They do.
And what is their, would you say, mission?
We want to make people aware that we exist, first off, and that we have a website that has information, and we have a helpline. So our website, you can email our helpline at uccemfp@ucanr.edu, but that's a lot to remember. So if you just Google Orange County Master Food Preserver, you'll find our webpage, and on our page there is a form that you can fill out and ask questions. So you can send in, say, We've had all different kinds of questions. Food safety ones, like I left the chicken stew out on the kitchen counter all night. Is it safe to eat? No is the answer for that one. You cannot just put it back in the fridge or heat it up again. Don't do that. But also food preservation, you know, do I need to have my gauge tested on my canner? Just all different kinds of food preservation. We've only had a couple that we've not been able to answer, and one of those was from another country, and it was about preserving fruits with alcohol. And we don't have any of that research-based information here because we only use what we get from our state scientists. So our main base is the National Center for Home Food Preservation, and they're based in Georgia at the University of Georgia. And they give us all the research-based information combined with other extension research schools around the country. So in California, we have Dr. Linda Harris, and she's at UC Davis, and she has a team of colleagues, and all of them develop all the research-based information and send it out to us. So most recently, University of Colorado did some research on kimchi and on kombucha, both neat fermentation methods, and now we have research-based information that we can now share with the public.
You know, I think that's absolutely wonderful. What I like about it is, you know, since we're a garden-based, you know, what we do in the show is pretty much from your garden. Mm-hmm. What I've gotten from it is all these different things that I can do with the things from my garden and that we could do so healthy. And what I also like about it is that this is a community outreach. And the classes are either free or close to. It's a minimal charge for them. And
yes,
you can always find out about them. And it teaches you what you can do with things that you are harvesting.
Correct.
And it's always time appropriate that you're teaching. And I've also found out they're a really friendly group of people.
Yes.
You know, they like to give back.
They do.
And when you call the hotline or you check out something on the web page, there are a bunch of kind people that just they want to give from their heart and they want to teach what they have a passion for.
Exactly.
And they've been trained and part of what they train and they're part of what they get taught and in exchange they get to pass it on.
Yes.
And it's really, really cool. And if you guys are having stuff coming up from your garden, you're going, oh my gosh, I have 18 heads of cabbage that I planted. What do I do with them? Or I have all of this I planted. What do I do with it? Check out the webpage. You know,
yes.
Go. There's a lot of great information. What kind of stuff would we find on our webpage?
On the webpage, you will find links to that National Center for Home Food Preservation. And they have tons of ideas for using your preserving your crop, but we also have all of the handouts from our previous classes. We post them there. So we do our hands-on public classes every other month, and we try to do it based on the season. So right now, we're coming into stone fruit season, and I noticed the tree out in the garden here is covered with some sort of nectarines?
Yes, nectarines. I was just walking through, and the people working in the gardens gave me a couple nectarines.
Right, but that tree is loaded. So if you have a tree like that in your yard, you're going to have all of this fruit. Almost all of it's going to come ripe about, you know, in a short period of time. So you need to figure out what to do with that fruit. So in June, we're going to focus on stone fruits because that's what's coming. And we're going to teach preservation methods. And each year we kind of focus on a different stone fruit. Last year we did cherries. This year we're going to do peaches. We might do some other, you know, fruit that's in season at that time. And we teach both savory methods and sweet things. So the upcoming class with peaches, we're going to teach peach barbecue sauce and a peach salsa. And those ingredients that are in those are also other things that are coming in right now into season. So we try to teach by seasonality, and our website has all of those handouts so that you can go back and look them up and find out the information and the recipes that we taught. And we don't just put in the recipes, we have in there like how to can and how to ferment and how to dehydrate. All of that information is written out and you can read through, and it's almost like attending the class one more time. The difference is at our public classes, when you come, it's hands-on. So for a nominal fee, you come in, we provide everything, But you get to do the process and actually hands-on do it. So for canning something, you get to prep the recipe. You get to fill your jars, learn how to fill your jars, how to put the lids on, how to water bath can, how to safely pull them back out of the canner, and what to do with all of the jars and how to label them, all of that stuff. So it's a hands-on class, and you get to take home what you've made in the class along with the handout so you can go back and do it again. And you'll have access to other recipes. So we teach you so many things at these classes.
You know, I think the classes are so worthwhile. And maybe we should just talk for a moment before we start going into the other things. A lot of people think food preservation is just canning. What, you know, and that's what I hear a lot is just canning. That means, oh, you're food preserving. It means you're canning something. Could you just, like, list the different kinds of preservations?
Yes.
And maybe a little later we can go into a little bit about each one of them?
Okay. Well, everybody preserves food. We just do it in lots of different ways. And some people don't even think that they're preserving food in around, you know, this time of year or in this in our society. But you are. The basic thing that we do is we refrigerate. And we freeze. Those are our main methods of food preservation in our modern times. But they're limited, and they're definitely limited if the power goes out. So we also have dehydration, fermentation. We do teach canning. We teach proper use of your refrigerator and freezer and how to make sure it's safe and all of that kind of thing. So we can talk more about each of those if you want.
Oh, yeah, we have some time. There's so much This time of year, there's so many different things that we use for preservation. And
right.
I'm so excited about having you here today because we do have all these things coming up. That what do we do with them? You know, I noticed that tree out there. There's probably 400 nectarines on that tree. And when I get it at home, I can't eat 400 nectarines. I mean, and I size control my trees, so maybe I only get 300 nectarines. I have small trees. But that's more than one can eat and one's family can eat. And, you know, your neighbors love you, but there's so many different things you can do with that.
So the oldest method of preserving that fruit would be dehydration. People have dehydrated since the beginning. It's as simple as putting something out in the sun and letting it dry. Now, in our environment, we don't necessarily want to do just out in the sun. We live so close to the coast, we get a lot of humidity, so it would take ages for it to dry out. And we also have so many more pollutants in our air around here that we kind of don't want to let our fruit sit out there and just absorb all of that. So we recommend using your oven if you've got a convection oven, or buying an inexpensive dehydrator.
Well, let me ask you first. Can we talk about dehydration for a few minutes? What is dehydration?
Dehydration is lowering the moisture level. So molds need moisture to grow. So by taking the moisture out of a food, you're preventing molds from growing. So it's a great, easy way to get shelf-stable food. So you say the nectarine. I'll take it home, I'll cut it up into thin slices, and I may or may not peel it, depends, and I will put it in at home. At my house, I have to use a dehydrator. I don't have a convection oven. And they're an inexpensive device, about $60. You can buy a thing with five trays, and you put the fruit in there, and you turn it on, and it's a fan and a little heater element, and you control the temperature, so depending on what you're dehydrating, the little instruction book will tell you what temperature to put it at. Fruits are 125 to 135 degrees. And you can just let it run all night and in the morning check your fruit. What you want when you're done is you want fruit to be really dry. No, when you touch it, you don't want to feel moisture. What I do after I pull the fruit out of there, if I think it's dry, I usually put it in a big glass jar and I shake the jar once or twice a day, and if there's any condensation in there, I put the fruit back in the dehydrator. Once I have no condensation, then I store it in a cool, dark place. I can put it in Ziploc bags. I can put it in those. They sell Mylar bags, which keep the light out. The serious dehydrators use those. I pretty much just use a Ziploc and put it in the back corner of my pantry where it stays nice and dry. And the other fun thing about dehydrators is they come oftentimes with a tray, and you can puree your fruit and pour it in there and make your own homemade fruit leathers.
I was going to ask you about that. Now, you've done this before, and I find that kids like it, my husband likes it. And could you explain a little bit about fruit leather?
Well, I did some experimenting last year with fruit leathers, and I have determined, well, first off, I looked at the package on one from a store, and I read through the ingredients, and it was, you know, fruit purees, and it was sometimes a mix, but a lot of them had apple in it. And the reason apple is in there is it's full of pectin. And pectin is what causes jams and jellies to gel. It also made the fruit leather stay pliable and flexible, but still was dry enough. So I started adding pectin. So at the end of the week, if I've bought strawberries or picked a bunch in my yard, and I have some left, I'll throw them in the blender, and I add a little bit of the instant pectin, because you don't have to add sugar with that. Puree all that and then pour it in the tray, the fruit leathers come out really nice and flexible. If you don't want to use pectin, you could also put in some applesauce. And a lot of my fruit leathers, I make a mix of whatever fruit and applesauce. Last year, out here at South Coast Research, when the peaches came in, they were going to be having an event with 4-H kids, and they wanted the kids to have snacks from here that they could go say, that fruit was from that tree, and now you're eating this snack. And how you made that snack was dehydration, because it's something anybody can do. Most kids can slice up some fruit and put it in a dehydrator, and then it's something they've made themselves. So fruit leathers were fun. We made them ahead for them because it takes hours and hours to dry, but we wanted to show them that they could do it on their own if they wanted to.
And it's fun. Now, let's walk step by step. I have, let's say, some strawberries.
Yes.
And I want to dehydrate the strawberries. So I wash my strawberries.
Yes.
And then what do I do next?
I remove the hulls, the green leaves, out of there. Simple, you can use a little huller tool. You can just use a knife. You can use just about anything to get the hull out. And then I usually slice my strawberries. And I try to make them even as I can. Because if I get one real thin and one thick, the thin one's going to dry out far quicker than the thick one. So try to make even slices of whatever fruit you're going to dehydrate. And then you put them on your tray and put them in your dehydrator. And it will, the University of and Georgia has on their website, the National Center for Home Food Preservation, has a whole section on how to dry fruit, too.
Is there a link on the website?
Yes, our website. If you Google Master Fruit Preserver Orange County, we have links to the National Center. And they have all this information, and they tell you approximately how thick and how long it will take to dry. But that can vary because
humidity
the moisture in the strawberry grown after the rain versus the strawberry grown before the rain is going to differ. So it's a range.
It's approximate.
So you might have to go a little longer, a little, shorter.
So you take and cut the, clean them, you haul them out, you slice them evenly, you put them on your tray, you put the tray and you turn it on to the temperature it says, and you wait.
Yes.
And then you kind of check them back every so often to see, and then you have dehydrated fruit.
Yes. Some of the dehydrators, they ask you to rotate the trays every now and then, because if the heater element and the fan is on the top, the tray on the bottom isn't going to get as much. So every now and then you just come in and rotate your trays around. Another type of dehydrator has a trays with the fan at the back. So they're more like little drawers. And those you don't really have to rotate as much because it's going from back to front, not from top to bottom. So it's a little less work. But those are a lot more expensive than the $60 one we talked about earlier.
Now, I know I have a dehydrator.
Yes.
And I think it's wonderful because I'm busy. And I know a lot of our listening audience is really busy, and I'm looking for simple things to do. And when I have those peaches that are coming off or those nectarines that are coming off my tree and I just have too many, I can just go upstairs, wash those, cut them, stick them in there. It takes a matter of moments.
Yes.
And I have snacks or whatever I want to do for a long period of time.
Right.
And it's really easy. And then you also talked about fruit leathers.
Yes.
Now, fruit leathers are fun.
They are.
And the kids get really involved with this. And my kid is 65. He loves the fruit leathers. And could you tell us, you know, how simple, really that is a simple, with our busy lives, we're looking for simple things to do. And it's another really simple thing to do. And you know what I'm talking about? This, a lot of times you buy them in the store and they're rolled up and you stick them in lunch bags. But these are really healthy because there's nothing in there but the fruit and maybe some pectin in there.
Right. You have a choice. When you're making something yourself, you get to control what goes into it. So if you're making your own fruit leathers, you know that it's just fruit and whatever else you've put in there, not some funny chemical that you read on the label. You know it's something you've made, and so it's so much better, and better for your family, or for you and your family, or whoever else you're going to give these to. The other thing then, once you've dried something like that, most of the time people consider it just a snack, but we take the dried fruit and we add it to like our yogurt, or I make homemade granola, or you can add it to make a muffins, and you can add that dried fruit straight into what you're making, and
oatmeal,
you don't have to
and cereals, and we do it camping. We'll take some of it camping, and it's really nice, and there's so many different things you can do with it. Now, let me ask you about fruit leathers, because so many of us go, how do I make that? That sounds complicated. How do you turn this fruit into this flat piece of stuff? You know, I'm just very candid. It's like a lot of us have never done this, and once you've done it, it's a no-brainer. But let's say we brought up some peaches off our tree. What do we do next?
We wash them. I would peel the peaches, and a quick, easy way to peel a peach is to put a little X in the bottom and submerge it in boiling water for like 30 seconds, and then pull them out and pop them in a bowl of ice water, and then the skins will slide right off. Then cut the fruit and get it off the pit and put it in a food processor or a blender and blend it up. Now, this is where I would taste it. Some things are going to be really naturally wonderfully sweet, and others not quite so much. And so if my peaches are tending to be not super sweet and I think, oh, it really needs a little bit, I might add a little bit of agave. I might add a little bit of honey. You could add straight sugar. If you use regular just sugar, you need to blend it a while to let the sugar dissolve in there, but you're controlling the amount of sweetener in there when you do that. So then I've got that puree.
Let me ask you a question. Can I mix another fruit in with it?
Oh yeah, you can make a blend of whatever you have in the garden. So I've done apple peach, and you can add other flavors. So like the peach, I wanted to make a spiced one, so you could add some cloves or some cinnamon, and it turns it from just plain peach into almost a dessert flavor just by adding spices to it.
So you put all this in the blender,
mm-hmm.
and whatever you do, it could be just straight peaches. You could just do straight peaches by themselves, or you could add other things. You put it in the blender, you turn it on, and then what do you do next?
Well, once it's nicely pureed, you don't want big chunks in there. You want it as smooth as possible.
And the reason for that is?
Well, it's going to dry more evenly. If you have chunks, you could do it with chunks in there. And that happens every now and then to me because I didn't do it right. And that's not a problem. It just takes a little bit longer to dry. So as smooth as possible. And I think it's part of it that's what kids are used to, is a purchased fruit leather is very smooth.
And I would also think the time that it will finish at a different time.
Yes.
So how long it will stay stay good for would be a shorter period of time if you had some more chunks in there.
Well, you want the whole thing to be good and dry. It just may take longer if there's chunks of fruit versus pureed. Once you've pureed it, you've broken up all the cell walls, and so your fruit's going to dry faster than it would if it was a whole piece of fruit. Okay. So it's a lot faster, except that you're pouring, after you've pureed it, you're going to pour it into a tray. So your fruit or your dehydrator needs to come with a tray. And if it doesn't, a lot of them sell them as add-ons. So you can go to the manufacturer's website and grab the trays for it. So
now, a lot of them come with, like, they have it's a mat, and you have larger pieces. But then there's this, like, silicone, or what would you call that?
Yes, it is a silicone
tray. And you just put it right on top of it, and nothing will drip through.
Yes.
And I think that's what you're trying to say, is nothing will drip through, and you could put it on there, and the liquid you could put right on the tray and put it into the dehydrator.
Yes. And sometimes you have to buy those little mats. You know, they don't always come with it. So you have to go to the manufacturer and get another, order them extra. The cheaper end dehydrators that are round with the fan at the top, they sell a round tray. It looks like a big donut, flat donut thing, and you pour your puree into there. So your fruit leathers are not going to be square. They're going to be like a, you can cut them into wedges. Mm-hmm. And that's what I usually do when I have used that kind of dehydrator. And then you put it in, let it dry. Usually at the end, it's pretty dry, but when I peel it up, the backside that's been sitting against the tray or the mat isn't as dry, but it's sort of dry. So I flip them over and dry them for a little bit longer. And sometimes it also helps to spray a little bit of vegetable oil and then wipe it with a towel to so it doesn't stick. That's another hint and technique. And those are the kind of things we share at all our classes.
And believe it or not, it's really simple. It's one of those things that you could just, it just takes a moment to do, and you walk away from it pretty much. You keep an eye on it, but you could go do other things.
Yes.
And you pull these out, and you can roll them up, or you can cut them in wedges.
Yeah.
And
There's another side benefit to doing this. Well, it makes your house smell lovely. Because that fan is going past that fruit, you've got like this giant, say you're doing strawberries, it's like spraying strawberry potpourri everywhere in the house. It just smells so good. So when we did an event, a demonstration, one place, people would walk over just because they're going, what smells so good, when we had our dehydrator running. So they would, it was an advertisement for the dehydrator. It smelled good. And then we had people coming and ask, well, how are you doing that? So it was fun.
You know, I tend to leave my dehydrator out for months on end, especially this time of year, because I go from one thing to another,
yes.
And then to my figs. And there's always wonderful things to do with dehydrator.
There are.
Oh, gosh, Cinda.
You can do herbs.
Herbs. Tell us about herbs.
If you pick your fresh herbs and you harvest them regularly, you can dry them to use when they've died back. So those you need a real low temperature. Same thing, you put them out on the wash them, dry them, and put them out on the tray and let them dry. They're going to dry really quickly. The leaves don't have as much moisture in them. So I've dried basil, oregano. You can dry your own bay leaves if you have a bay tree. You can make all different kinds of things. It says you can use your dehydrator for nuts. And what that does is it dries them out enough to make them safer to store if you have a nut tree, like fresh pecans. Let's see. You can do vegetables.
Well, let me ask you a question about herbs. So if I tap, a lot of us just grow herbs like in our windowsill or out in our garden, and some herbs aren't all year long. So what you're saying is that you could take those like basil,
yes,
and you wash them off, and you need to make sure they're really dry. Is that correct?
Not super dry, because the dehydrator is going to dry them off too.
Okay, so then you just dry them off while you have a plethora of it.
Right.
And you put it in there, and it doesn't take that long. And you pull it out, and you could either leave it whole or crackle it up, put it in a jar, and you could have that for when it's not in season.
Yes. That's
wow.
The whole idea of all of this food preservation is having things when it's not in season. That's another big thing, is a lot of the people are getting into food preservation because they want to take advantage of what's in season. They realize they go to the farmer's market or what's in their yard, and they want to preserve it for the wintertime, because you can get anything anytime. It's just not as good. If you get stuff when it's in season, it's good. Wonderful.
It's wonderful. Hey, I need to take a moment and let our listening audience know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And the opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. Well, that was our commercial or a break for the moment. But back to the herbs. So we can try our own herbs.
You can.
And I'll buy the little plant, you know, instead of buying the cut herbs.
Right.
And I could buy the little plant, and a lot of times I put them in my yard, and if I don't put them in my yard, I have most of it growing in the yard. I could take whatever's left and just dehydrate that and save it, because we know those, if you buy it in the store, it's expensive.
It is.
And it's easy to do. And we are talking about a dehydrator, but we could also do that in our oven.
You could. If you have a regular oven, you need to set it as low as possible. So some ovens don't get really low temp.
Mm.
But also you need to prop it open. So you stick like a wooden spoon mm-hmm. because the moisture needs to be come out of the oven. So okay. if you're using an oven, also get a food safe metal rack and put it on a cookie sheet so that the air can circulate around whatever you're dehydrating in your oven. Because all those trays are designed with, they're like a mesh, so that the air can go all the way around it.
And we could find out about this on the website too.
Yes,
correct?
Exactly.
Would you mind giving our website again?
Well, I would just do a Google search for Orange County Master Food Preserver and you'll come up with our website, and we have a link to our helpline and all of our other handouts from classes.
Now let me ask you, I know with Master Gardeners, if we just say Orange County Master Gardeners, we might end up in another state on a Google search. Do we need to put California in our...
That might be a good idea.
Yeah, put California in there, and Master Food Preservers, Orange County, California. It's a fun website. If you just want to go check out different ways of preservation and you just kind of want to touch your feet in there without actually going to a class, mm-hmm. check it out first and see if it's right for you. And if it's right for you, we offer lots of classes, don't we?
We do. Every other month we have a hands-on class where you make it in the class. We also do demonstrations at various places. We're at a lot of the garden shows. We are at Tanaka Farms in Irvine. We're doing regular demonstrations there. We do them for community events and groups. We've had plant societies ask us to come and do demonstrations, like the Herb Society. They want to know how to use their herbs and how to preserve them, and we've done talks at various things. So if you would like a demonstration for your group, email our helpline and ask, or go onto our website, and there's a form on there, which is the same as our helpline, and you can say, I'd like to do an event, and could you guys come and speak? So we've done them for lots of different groups, so we'd love to talk with you about that as well. We're also going to be at the Orange County Fair this year. Every day of the week, we're going to be at the fair. So if you're at the fair, we're in the culinary building, and you can come visit us. And we will be doing live canning, dehydrating, fermenting, all of those food preservation methods each day at the fair. So it's going to be lots of fun.
Now, you should be seeing this woman light up right now. She is so excited because part of what she likes to do, and the rest of the Master Food Preservers, is they like to share their knowledge.
Yes.
And they like to give back. And so any question is a good question. And they like to answer questions. They have this hotline. And you could always go on the hotline and ask any questions because it's their way of giving back.
Yes.
And we all have our own ways of giving back, and that's their way. So no question is a silly question. You know, and they learn from it, and other people will learn from your questions too.
Correct. And sometimes when it first comes in, we don't necessarily know the answer, but we have several in our group who love to do research, and they'll go back through and find the tested recipes and the right information. So we don't just answer you quickly. Sometimes we take a day to make sure that we're giving you the best answer possible before we reply.
Now, we're coming up, and you talked about having classes in June.
Yes.
And the class in June is going to be stone fruit.
Yes.
And what are you going to be doing with stone fruit?
We are going to be making a peach barbecue sauce, which is really good for the summer grilling season coming up. And we're going to be making a peach salsa.
And what is that? You're going to be making it. How does that deal with preservation? What are you
going
to do with
it? Well, for that one, we're going to teach you how to water bath can.
Water bath.
Water bath canning is a method of putting food in cooking a recipe, and the process of putting the food in a jar and boiling the jar for the specific length of time the recipe calls for, which is why we use tested recipes. The scientists have done testing, and they know how long it takes for the temperature to get to boiling inside the very middle of that jar of food. And so that's how we know to process it for 15 minutes, say, for the salsa, or 20, whatever the recipe says. And then after that 20 minutes, then we can turn the canner off and we can take the jars out and let them cool. And we know that it's safely heated up to kill all of the bacteria. And at the same time, as the jars cool, as it's canning, as it's boiling, the product inside expands, and the oxygen in the top of the jar is pushed out. So, and as it cools, then the lid is sucked down, and you've got an airtight seal. So we teach you all of those things and how to make sure it's safe when you come to one of these classes.
So that sounds like this process is fairly simple, but you need to learn how to do it so you do it safely.
Yes, there are just some tips and techniques, and we just emphasize doing it properly and using tested recipes. So, and the boiling water is only one way of canning, and it's only good for high-acid foods like jams and jellies, pickles, fruits, because they're high-acid. If you wanted to can your green beans to eat as just green beans, you have to do a whole nother process called pressure canning. And the biggest difference is botulism. Botulism is a toxin. And what happens is it's everywhere in our environment, but the toxin can't grow except in an airless environment. So when we put the food in a jar and we boil it and form a vacuum, we formed an airless environment. And we then set the jars in our pantry at room temperature. Well, which is fine for high acid. So botulism likes low acid, room temperature, and in a vacuum. So you have to do something to those low acid foods in order to preserve them safely. So to do that, you have to get them above 240 degrees. Well, water is only going to boil at 212. So you have to figure out a way to get it hotter than that. And the way to do that is with a pressure canner. So there's a whole other technique in there for pressure canning. And we do teach the pressure canning method in our tomato class. So every August, we do both the boiling water bath canning and pressure canning so that we can tell you safely how to pressure can. But if you follow those tested recipes that we told you about, those recipes are going to tell you how long to boil it or if you need to pressure can it. So don't assume that you can just boil everything. You have to pressure can certain foods.
And it's real important. You want to be safe.
Yes.
It's not that complicated, but you do need to know what you're doing.
Yes.
And if you'd like to have your tomatoes preserved for January,
yes,
take a class, look on the website, learn what you're doing, and you could have your harvest year-round.
Yes. Tomatoes are one of those foods that you can safely water bath or boil water can. But if you wanted to create like your own marinara and you've added peppers and onions and other things to that, you have changed the pH. So tomatoes are a borderline. 4.6 is our dividing line, and they're borderline. So all the methods for preserving them in using canning, you have to add lemon juice. So when you're going to follow the recipe, it'll tell you to add a tablespoon of lemon juice for each quart.
And that just adds a little more acidity to
it. It does. It takes it into
right
the
over
safe
the
zone. So, but if you are adding onions and other things and making your own marinara, now you've gone the other way and you're not in a safe zone. So then you'd have to pressure can the product.
Okay, so basically you have two different methods, pressure canning and pressure...
And boiling water or water bath canning.
Water bath canning. And depending on the pH is which one you do.
Yes.
And I bet you have lots of information on the website on that.
We do, because we have taught every August we try to do both methods, because people want to learn how to pressure can. And it can take a little bit longer to pressure can, but you can also do a lot of jars at once in a pressure canner. So we teach both methods in August so that you can safely make whatever tomato product you would like to make. Tomato soup with all the other yummy stuff in it, or just plain old tomatoes that you want to put up for the wintertime.
So what I'm getting at is that you have two different methods.
Yes.
And both methods work really well depending on what type of product you have.
Yes.
And you just need to be aware what product you're working with and use the method that's appropriate for that product.
Correct.
And that you teach classes on doing both of those methods.
We do.
And that, if you learn how to do it, it's fun. I know people that get together and they combine their harvest and it's just a project in the kitchen. And
yes,
then they share their harvest. And I know I've gotten wonderful presents as preserves.
Yes.
And it's a lot of people do them for Christmas presents and, you know, holiday presents. And they could put beautiful labels on it. And,
right.
And they tend to last for quite a period of time,
don't
they?
That kind of reminds me. So we do our classes seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
So we start in February and we do citrus because that's when citrus is coming into the season. Then in April, we kind of turn and we do fermentation, because you can ferment at almost any time of the year. But that's been a really, really popular class because so many people are getting into fermentation. Then in June, we're doing stone fruit. August, we're doing tomatoes. In October, we're going to do fall fruit. And then at the end of November, beginning of December, we do a class called Gifts from the Kitchen. And Gifts from the Kitchen, we find things that would make excellent gifts, and we teach you how to can them. Or one year, we did this beautiful dehydrated vegetable soup mix. So we had all these dried vegetables, and we layered them into jars, and they were so beautiful. They looked like little rainbows in the jar. And we made tags and had seasoning ideas. And so everybody went home and was like, oh, we can use a dehydrator to make a Christmas gift. Or we could make, we made chocolate raspberry sauce one year and learned how to can that. Those are excellent, fun gifts. Last year we did a pepper jelly, and it was beautiful red and green flecks in a jelly, which was more of a savory jelly. Oh, but so good. So we every year we come up with ideas, and then we also teach you great ways to do labels, like you were saying. And somebody teaches you ways to make it look really cool and give you ideas on how to gift it, you know. So you made give somebody a bag of chips and a homemade salsa, and you put it in a basket so that it's, you know, a cute salsa gift kind of thing. So there's so many creative people in our group, and we use everybody's talent to share with the public different fun things. So.
And I think a lot of times people will find things that hit them, what their favorites are.
Yes.
And I think part of what you guys do is you expose them to a lot of different methods.
Yes.
And some people use all the different methods, and some people say, hey, I really like canning, or hey, I really like my dehydration, or I like fermentation. And, you know, they'll concentrate on one aspect of preservation.
Yes.
And it's really nice because you offer it seasonally.
Yes.
And it's hands-on. And you could just look at our website and give our website again, my dear.
Yes. Our website is ucanr.org/MFPOC, or just like we said, Google California Orange County Master Food Preservers and you'll find it. We have lots of information on there. We also have information about how to become a Master Food Preserver on there. So if you're interested in getting the whole gamut of knowledge and you would love to be a volunteer, you can find out about how to do that on that website as well.
While we're talking about this, why don't you tell us about how do you become a Master Food Preserver?
Well, you Master Food Preservers...
Do you have to have a degree?
No. Anybody can do it. You have to attend one of our information days. So we have three information days, and you have to come to at least one of those. And at the information day, we explain the whole program and everything you're going to learn and all of the different details that you need to know. Then if you still decide you want to become a Master Food Preserver, we meet and talk with you. We want to find out your heart and your volunteer spirit. That's what we're really looking for. You don't have to be a teacher. You may just want to be one of those people who helps in the office and makes the handouts. Or you may want to be taking pictures at an event. We need all different kinds of talent, and it's not even talent. We just need you to serve.
You don't have to have a degree in anything in particular.
No.
You don't even have to have a degree.
No. So then after, if you've attended that information day, then we send you a link to our application. And you fill out the application, and then we'll tell you whether or not we have room for you in our current class. And then the next class will start, and it will be a 10-week class. And the course is about $200. And it includes all of the food items for all the canning projects and dehydration and fermentation and all of the books that you need. And it's all open book, so all the quizzes and even the final are all open book, because it's not about always getting the information into your head. It's knowing where to find the information so that you can say to someone, I'm not positive, but I think I know exactly where to look for the answer. And then you flip to your book and you can help the person find the information that they need. So it's really just about serving.
It's about serving. It's a give back.
Yes.
And they teach you. You learn university-based information.
Yes.
And in exchange for that, they ask you to go out and pass it on to the public. And you have to do so many hours of volunteer?
25 hours a year is what you do.
And that could be in a variety of different aspects. Like
yes.
you said, in office, you could be teaching, you could be a support person. There's a lot of
different things you
could do. You could
and in addition, you do have to do continuing education every year, 12 hours of continuing ed. But that's a kind of a fun thing, too. And we do that. We offer lots of different ways to get continuing education. And every other month, we also have classes internally where our master food preservers come and we refresh skills and we test recipes and we do all the different kinds of things. And that's a time for us to get together and be a fun community. Like you said, it's finding the people that you that love to do the same things and sharing ideas. So continuing ed's fun too.
Exciting. Well, we have about 15 minutes left.
Okay.
And why don't we talk about what do you think would interest people? We did a little bit of dehydration. Should we talk a little bit about...
Fermentation is the popular one,
Let's talk about fermentation. First of all, what is fermentation?
Fermentation is a natural method for lowering the acidity of a food. And the lower the acidity, the longer the food is going to last. So traditionally, it was done since Neolithic times. They would dig a big pit, and they would put food in, and it would ferment naturally. Now, you want to know what fermentation really is? How to do it?
Yes,
okay.
Of course.
Fermentation.
Now, we hear about things that are fermentation. Like I hear about something called kombucha, and I hear about like sauerkraut. Is this what we're talking about?
This is what we're talking about. Foods that are lower in acidity naturally. So you take that cabbage, and you've chopped it up, and you want to create an environment where good bacteria go to work. So the good bacteria are lactobacillus bacteria, and there's lots of different kinds of lactobacillus, and they're everywhere in our environment, but they love a salty environment. So I take that cabbage, and I chop it up, and I add some salt, and I start massaging it, and the liquid comes out of it, and then I pack it into jars and make sure it's underneath some liquid. So there's enough liquid so that that cabbage is submerged. That bacteria goes to work in that salty environment, and it eats the carbohydrates in the cabbage, and it produces two things, lactic acid and carbon dioxide. So traditionally, in Germany, they would have had those big crocks. They would have packed all the cabbage in and put a weight on to keep the cabbage below the brine, and then put a lid on the crock. And a lot of times there was a moat in the crock so that you put water in there. So as the gases formed, it pushed the lid up just enough, and the gases escaped. And then the lid went back down into that moat of water. There are so many things on the market today. There's these airlocks. There's pickle pipes. There are all different ways to put your food in a jar and keep the good bacteria in there and the bad bacteria out, but you also can let the gases out without opening the jar constantly.
You know, there's so many different ways to do it. And I think, you know, cabbage coming out of your garden is wonderful and making sauerkraut. And it doesn't taste like what you buy in the store. It's so good.
Well,
and we throw in a little caraway and some celery and, you know, a couple other things. And it's just actually yummy, and it's so good for our health.
It is. Because it is an alive food. It's got all those probiotic-type bacteria like yogurt would have. And so you never want to heat this product too hot. So I never can mine. So if you bought stuff on the shelf at the store, like some sauerkraut on the shelf, and it's in a jar just sitting there at room temperature, you know it's been heated and it's no longer alive. So you can nowadays more and more find some in the refrigerated section, but it's so easy to do yourself.
And it's inexpensive.
It is,
it's
yes.
It's salt in whatever the vegetable is.
Exactly. And there's two main things. So we talked about sauerkraut. That's one, that's a shredded vegetable. You can also do it with solid vegetables. You can take your beets and quarter them and put them in salt water, and they'll pickle themselves. And you can do, right now on my kitchen counter, I have a jardinera. So it's a jar with cauliflower, red bell pepper, carrot, celery, one jalapeno just for a little kick, bay leaves, coriander, onions in there. So all these different vegetables, and they are fermenting, and they become a wonderful pickle. I can add them, dice them up, add them to a salad, chop them up even finer, and add them to a sandwich. Most of the time, they just disappear. I'll put them out before dinner, and Next thing I know, that plate's gone.
And, you know, we all spend so much money on probiotics. And what you get, the probiotics in there, is so inexpensive to have, and it's
yes.
so tasty.
It is. It's so good for you. The other flip side of when we teach our fermentation classes, we don't just focus on lacto-fermentation of vegetables. We also teach some other methods. You mentioned kombucha earlier. So kombucha is another fermented product. It takes a little bit more.
It's a fermented black tea, isn't it?
Yes.
A sweet tea?
It's a fermented tea. You said sweet tea. Well, what happens is the bacteria that you use to make kombucha eat the sugar in that tea. So, and then it makes it a little more acidic. But to make kombucha, you have to start with what's called a SCOBY. And a SCOBY means symbiotic culture of yeasts and bacteria, or bacteria and yeasts. And that SCOBY looks kind of like this. It's not the prettiest thing. It's a disc of whitish looking, it's kind of solid, but thick jello. Back in the day when people used to make really thick jello things, it kind of looks and feels like that. And it goes to work on eating those sugars, and it actually grows. So your SCOBY doubles in size every time you do this tea. And we have handouts on our website about that as well. And this last class that we did on fermentation, we did kefir, depending on how you want to pronounce it. And kefir is traditionally a dairy product that's been fermented. It's like a drink full of probiotics. But we decided to focus on water kefir this last time. And water kefir and the dairy kefir use what's called kefir grains. There's no actual grain involved. It's just the term for the SCOBY. And instead of this big disc like you have in kombucha, it's little tiny translucent, they almost look like miniature cauliflower florets, kind of clearish, and they go to work, same as the SCOBY and the kombucha, eating the sugars. So to make water kefir, you take 4 cups of sweetened water, so a quart of water, a quarter cup of sugar, and a quarter cup of these kefir grains, and you put them in a jar, and you let them sit for 2 days. After 2 days, you strain off the liquid and you retain your little SCOBYs to start another batch. And then that liquid that you have is full of probiotic. You add a little more flavoring of whatever you would like. Lemon juice, ginger, pieces of raspberry, raisins, apple juice, whatever flavor you want. You add just a little bit more, like a quarter cup of that in there. Put it in bottles and seal it. So they recommend swing top bottles and round ones especially because square ones tend to explode. And you seal them up and leave them out again for 2 days on your counter. Then you move it to the refrigerator and it's like a natural soda. So it's slightly sweet but not very because the bacteria has eaten all the sugar. And the flavor is whatever you've chosen. And it's good for you and it's quick and easy. It's a fun method.
I love doing all this stuff. And it's wonderful. And what I find out about fermentation is there's the health benefits, which
right.
is phenomenal. And we're all learning about that. And I think that the society as a whole is learning about how important our gut is. And
yes.
these types of fermentation really help our gut. And we always need that. But also what I'm finding out is that it's really inexpensive.
It is.
You know, it's inexpensive. And it's, you know, for like kombucha, you're making some tea.
Right.
You know, you're making some tea, you're adding sugar, and the sugar is going to be disappearing because it's going to be eaten.
Right.
And the cost of doing that, and I make 5 gallons at a time.
Wow.
But that works because we drink a lot of it. And it's easy to do. And what you're talking about the other methods too, the kefir, sounds like it's inexpensive also to do, and it's also relatively simple.
Right.
You just need to know how to do it.
Right. You need to find some kefir grains. So you have to order those or find a friend who's been doing it. Because the same thing like kombucha, the SCOBY doubles in size. As you make water kefir or dairy kefir, the little kefir grains grow or multiply. So soon you'll have more than the quarter cup you need, so you can give them to a friend, or you can start more batches. You would probably end up starting bunches of batches, Katrina, because
we
5 gallons
it.
Of kombucha. So
we
you share it.
We share.
But or you can order the kefir grains, and it's just a matter of keeping them fed. And you feed them. If you're not going to continually make it, you have to feed them in, with some sugar and store them in the refrigerator. The refrigerator just slows them down.
And when I said 5 gallons, I didn't start off with 5 gallons. We just decided we really liked it. And so everybody that comes over, we have a lot of company. This is one of the drinks we now serve to our, you know, ourselves and our company. So we tend to drink a lot of it, but not everybody does that. So you can make it in the size appropriate for yourself.
Exactly.
You know, Cindy, I can't believe it. We're almost the end of our hour.
Oh, my goodness. And wow.
Yes. So wrapping up, I think we need to let everybody know where they could find you.
We are on our website, and on our website, if you Google Master Food Preserver, Orange County, California, we list all the different places where we're going to be. So if you scroll down, we have a calendar of events, and it will tell you where we're going to be in the future. And our next hands-on class will be in June, and we're going to be doing stone fruit. And we'd love to have you come visit and take a class with us. But if you don't have time for a class and you have some questions, please leave a message on our helpline, and we will get back to you.
And they are really, really wonderful people. The Master Food Preservers are really here to help you out, you know, to help you explore, you know, what's right for you. Is it everything that they do? Is it somewhat you do? Is it one thing? You know, if it's just one thing, they're there to help you out. And it's fun. Be prepared to enjoy yourself. Be prepared to come home with something in your hand. Be prepared to learn. And just go check out the website and see what you think and check out the classes. And you don't have to go to the class, but there's also a lot of great information at classes and on the website.
Yes.
So, Cindy, I really want to thank you so much for coming today and spending your time and sharing with us your knowledge about food preservation.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's been lots of fun.
And until next week, we hope you all have fun in your garden.